Find other great podcasts like this one at podmoth.network.
If tales of ghostly hauntings, Bigfoot encounters, extraterrestrial interactions, and cosmic awakenings are your cup of tea, then join me, Eric Szilagyi, host of Uncomfortable Podcast, every Tuesday at 10 a.m. Make Uncomfortable your home for the topics that reside on the fringe of our reality. Eyewitnesses, researchers, and experiencers, join me on a weekly basis to delve into their paranormal and otherworldly experiences. Heard in over 65 countries worldwide, follow Uncomfortable Podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your casts. Uncomfortable is now presented in video form on YouTube as well. So, as always, my friends, stay uncomfortable.
Hey there, fellow true crime aficionados. We're the host of Bad Acts, a true crime podcast. I'm Danielle.
And I'm Aaron.
Join us every Thursday for twisted true crime tales of dark deeds and despicable people. We focus on lesser known unique stories with a new case each week. We've covered family annihilators, cannibals, revenge killings, killer kids, mysterious murders, survivor stories, and much more. We've even tackled stories of people who blame zombies, vampires, ghosts, and voodoo for their bad acts.
Of course, we know they're the only ones to blame. You can find us everywhere you get your podcasts, or you can visit our website at badactspod.com.
If you like fresh stories and new perspectives on crime, Bad Acts will be your new jam. Join Bad Acts every Thursday. Stay safe, y'all.
See you soon.
Welcome back to Brutal, Bizarre, and Boozy. Thank you for joining us, everyone. How are you doing today, Declan?
You guys. I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. I love hanging out with our listeners, and I love hanging out with you. So,
yes, me too.
Yay for us and all of our friends out there. What story do you have for us today?
I am going to be talking about Lars Mittank.
How do you spell that last name?
M-I-T-T-A-N-K. Mittank.
Okay. The name sounds familiar because I feel like I've read it before.
But it's within the last 15 years, so.
Okay.
Maybe you've seen it in the news or something, but...
Could be.
What story do you have for us today, Mom?
I have a story for you about a stalker. We don't do a lot of stalking cases.
And this one, not good.
Yeah, this is... No one dies in my story. Although you might wish that this person did, but he has not yet. That could be changing, but the guy in the story, his name is Christopher Thomas, and he is a gross person. To go with my story, I brought the cocktail called Wicked Behavior, because I thought it sounded very...
Okay, not off to a great start.
Kind of spot on. I mean, like I said, it's a stalking story, and that's pretty wicked, in my opinion. This drink is made of 1.5 ounces of bourbon, 3/4 of an ounce of pineapple juice, 1/4 ounce of elderflower liqueur, 1/4 ounce of Aperol, 1/4 ounce of lemon juice, and 1/4 ounce of honey. The steps are to add all ingredients to a shaker with ice, shake well, and strain into a chilled coupe glass. And if you have a slice of dried pineapple, you could garnish that on the top. I do not have a slice of dried pineapple, so I didn't garnish it. Are you ready to try this drink? I don't know.
Let's give it a try.
How I'm going to feel about this.
I don't think the flavors are going to match too well.
going to be good or bad. I like Aperol. Yeah. I like elderflower. Don't know if I like them together.
I don't think it's going to go great with pineapple either.
Yeah. I don't know. We'll find out. I smell the pineapple. And I think I smell the elderflower. It's kind of on the back end and kind of hidden.
The elderflower gives it like a gin note on the nose.
Yeah, I could see that. It's got that dryness with the Aperol. And so it kind of hits you a little bit on the back of the throat with the dryness. But it's not terrible. Yeah. Maybe a little bit more pineapple juice in it.
Definitely not the worst we've had.
Yeah, I don't know. Second sip, I'm not liking it as much as the first. We'll see by the end of the story if I have gotten into it more, but I'm kind of thinking that. It kind of has a beer aftertaste to it, and I don't like beer.
I could see that a little bit, yeah.
Yeah.
Like yeasty.
A little bit. I don't know if that's the Aperol. I think it's the Aperol. I don't know. Whatever. Who cares? Let's get to my story. Christopher Thomas, the not nice guy. He was born, I mean, he could have been worse. He didn't kill anybody. So there's that. Like I said, he was born in 1984. He grew up in Gladwin, Michigan. Samantha Stites was born in 1991. So a few years younger than him. And she grew up in Elk Rapids, Michigan. She was raised by a single mother. Samantha enjoyed a lot of outdoor sports like soccer, hiking, and kayaking. She was known for being welcoming and friendly, including everyone around her in her activities. So if she was doing something, she was bringing everybody with her. She's so friendly. Her friends described her as having a dark sense of humor, which I think a lot of people that know us probably would say the same thing.
Yeah.
I think that goes with our whole family. Like all three of us have a pretty dark sense of humor. Sam was attending Garden Valley State University in Allendale, Michigan in 2011 when she met Christopher at a campus Christian group gathering. I don't believe he was going to school there. I think he just showed up. Kind of weird. But yeah, maybe he did go there and like audited a class or two. I don't know. But he started going to this Christian group on campus. The two would see each other often at the group events, and he eventually contacted her on social media. Initially, Sam thought Christopher seemed lonely and was socially awkward. She felt sorry for him. So she was nice, and he must have believed she was an approachable person. She was friendly, she chatted with him, and he took it too far. He thought of it as encouragement, just because she was polite. So he messaged her on Facebook and started asking her on dates repeatedly. Hey, let's go do this. Let's go do that. I bought tickets to hockey. Let's go do this. Every time he asked her on a date, she said, no, thank you. Nope, I don't want to go. I'm not going. She declined every time. No, he never got the fucking hint. Okay. He would send her Bible quotes. He would tell her that their relationship was part of God's plan. He would make emotional statements to her. And she consistently told him she was not interested. I don't want to be friends with you. I don't want nothing to do with you to any degree, she would tell him. And he continued to not take the hint. She regularly found him following her around campus and at her job and while she was out doing things with her friends. He was always there.
That's strange.
What Sam didn't know at the time was that this was Christopher's pattern. He previously had another woman that he had been interested in. Her name was Kelly. Christopher met Kelly at her job, and he began repeatedly asking her on dates and following her around her college campus, even though he wasn't a student there. Like I said, pattern. When Kelly spotted him outside her house, she filed a restraining order against him. He was prosecuted for stalking and sentenced to 2 years probation, but apparently he didn't learn his lesson because just a few years later, he did the same thing with Sam. In her friend group, Christopher and his persistence became somewhat of a joke. Sam and all her friends would laugh about the situation, but they didn't really know his background. They were just making comments like, oh, it's Christopher. There he is again. Shocking. He's here everywhere we go.
Being bitchy.
What?
Just being bitchy, I guess, for good reason, but.
Well, I mean, if somebody is there all the time and they're not invited, it becomes he is again, you know?
True.
But they didn't know that he had been stalking someone in the past. So they just were like, oh, it's that creep again. When Sam went to her hometown after completing her bachelor's degree, Christopher somehow found her again. She found him physically following her in the small town and learned that he had been seen leaving her apartment on an occasion when she hadn't been home. A friend of a friend had said, oh, that's, yeah, I saw that guy. He was leaving your apartment. And she was like, well, he shouldn't have been in my apartment because I don't like him. And I didn't invite him to be at my apartment.
Horrifying.
3 years after their first meeting, Sam took an internship in Missouri. When she learned that Christopher had enrolled in the same program, she came to the realization that he had been stalking her this whole time.
Ugh.
That's when she applied for a restraining order, which was granted for a period of 6 years. The internship program withdrew Christopher's position based on learning about the situation. They found out, hey, this dude has, I'm not done. I am just getting started.
I'm not done, but this, like, the stalking part is so scary.
Yeah. Oh, just wait.
Oh, no.
It gets way worse.
Okay.
Thankfully, Samantha's life basically returned to normal because she now had a restraining order, so he stayed away. Which is great because usually, well, I shouldn't say usually, a lot of times the restraining order doesn't prevent anything. It's just a piece of paper in reality. And I mean, if they're hell bent on getting in touch with you, they're going to do it. But Christopher didn't. He kept away from her for those 6 years. Once it expired, well, there's no more restraining order. So he could just resume right where he left off. During the time that the restraining order was active, Sam had finished her master's degree and moved to a different town. Unfortunately, Christopher was still obsessed with her. And when the restraining order expired, he started showing up everywhere again in her new town. Jesus.
So he waited 6 years for that?
Yes, he's waited 6 years for that shit. She saw him in the street, around town in various places, at events in nearby towns, and he even joined the same recreational soccer league as her.
That means he was probably watching with like a rangefinder, like to see like,
oh, I'll tell you.
I'm 500 meters away. Okay, I need to take 10 steps back.
Right, 10 steps back. Sam started feeling like she was losing her mind, seeing him literally everywhere. She would go out of town, like to a nearby town to an event, and he would show up. And her friends would see her, see him everywhere at all sorts of things. So she filed for a new restraining order, but this one was denied. Just a few weeks after the order was denied, Christopher broke into Sam's home. He bound and gagged her. Before he did that, she saw that it was Christopher. He then put her in her own car, blindfolded her, and started driving.
She saw his face. That's never good.
She saw his face. Sam knew that being taken to another location decreased her chances of surviving the ordeal, and this would be a fight for her life. Even though she was blindfolded, she began counting the turns in an effort to try and determine where he might be taking her. She probably had no clue that he had been planning anything this drastic for quite some time. Months he had been planning this. He made significant efforts for those months to keep Sam in his life. Christopher rented a storage unit and built a soundproof bunker inside of it.
Storage unit isn't the place to do that, I feel.
Right.
Like, okay.
Well, he needed a place big enough to build a bunker. And he probably lived in an apartment or even in a small house, not big enough to build a bunker in.
I'm imagining the bunker that that one dude in Klamath built.
I think it was probably like about the same
just
size.
Just a cinder block, like poorly
worse.
Constructed.
Yeah. This guy made a bunker and lined it with like soundproof panels and insulation. It was inside
Say
of a storage shed.
Out
so
out?
Like plywood.
Or did he just use the storage
no.
shed as the walls? No.
No,
he
made a bunker. He made a room inside
like
of the
a separate
storage
room
shed.
Inside, okay.
A separate room. And then around the room, he insulated it and put sandbags so that would help the sound. And then inside of the plywood room, it was lined with soundproof wall panels and eye bolts.
I'm imagining Storage Wars, and they
yeah,
pull open
you,
that, and
right?
it's like, there's a girl.
Right? There were, I think, like separate doors. So there was like a pod with a door, and then like a vestibule, and then another door, and then the bunker that he had her in. It was wild. Mm. He then chained Sam to the wall and began bragging about how he had been able to keep tabs on her. He showed her a tracking app on his phone and explained that he had placed trackers on her car and several of her friends' car. He explained the idea about the bunker was inspired by the Netflix series You. Did you ever watch that show?
Yeah, the season 2 where they locked him in the...
The first season was the bunker, and then I think second season he got locked in there. I don't know. There was a bunker.
It was the second season where the crazy girl locked him in the glass.
I think so. It could be. But the first season was just the chick that he was stalking, he locked her in there. Regardless, this guy, Christopher, was inspired by that show and decided to build his own bunker. Obviously couldn't do it out of plexiglass, so he improvised and went with wood construction and then insulated the fuck out of it so that no one could hear her screaming. And also...
Just like the guy who's in Klamath, it sounds like.
Well, yeah, but in Klamath, you got neighbors next door in a storage shed in, like, storage wars. People aren't hanging out there for very long. It's not like they're at home. They go into the storage unit to get their shit and then go home.
I feel like
she could see the soundproof insulation on the walls, so she knew screaming wasn't going to do her any good. He explained that he intended to keep Sam there for 2 weeks. He had food and water and a bucket to use as a bathroom. What a gentleman. Gosh, I brought you food and water and here's a bucket. He planned to leave her paddleboard at the lake because he was going to fake her death so that no one would go looking for her other than at the lake, where they were like, oh, there's her paddleboard, and she must have died and drowned. Although probably
inspiration from Obama's chef.
I don't know. I don't know. Although probably on a paddleboard. Although probably terrified of the circumstances, Sam kept a level head and asked him to let her go. She promised not to tell police if he would just take her home. He said, well, I'm going to go to jail. And she said, if you take me home now, I won't tell anybody. And he said, I'll take you home, but we have to have sex first. And she was like, no, I'm not doing that. What? And he goes, well, I'm not letting you go then. So she finally agreed and was like, okay, you can rape me and then take me home. After raping her for several hours and on the promise that she wouldn't report him, Christopher finally took her home.
Jesus.
Knowing that he had a tracker on her car, she immediately called a friend to take her to the hospital and report the crime. So good on her for actually doing it. Sam's quick thinking and level head helped police to find Christopher that day. They found the boxes for the GPS trackers at his house. And when asked about them, he claimed that Sam had put the tracker on her own car. And they're like,
you know, just in case.
Right. They're like, that's bullshit. Nobody puts a tracker on their own car. And why would you have the box for the tracker? And so he's like, okay. When questioned about the kidnapping, he claimed it was just role playing that went too far.
Sure.
He denied raping her. But he didn't deny that they had sex. He just said it wasn't rape. A search of his devices showed pictures and videos of Sam going back more than 10 years. Investigators were able to get the data from GPS trackers and overlay it with the data from his cell phone. Basically, when he wasn't at work or sleeping, he was tracking her, and he was typically following her everywhere she went by just a few minutes.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Horrifying. In October 2022, he was arrested and charged with kidnapping, first-degree home invasion, torture, and aggravated stalking, and 4 counts of first-degree criminal sexual conduct. At the time of the arraignment, he pleaded not guilty and was denied bail. Over a year after the kidnapping and a plea agreement, he pleaded guilty to all of the charges except for the sexual misconduct charges. Those were dropped in the plea agreement. He was sentenced to 40 to 60 years in prison with the additional stipulation that if he ever gets released, he will have to wear a GPS tracker for the rest of his life.
Oh, wow.
I've never heard
that. That's crazy. I've never heard of that before either.
The earliest he will be eligible for release will be 20.
That's a fucking scarlet letter.
Right? He could be released in 2062 when he will be 78 years old. The judge that sentenced him was the same judge that denied the second restraining order just months before the kidnapping. Yeah.
Feeling guilt.
Oh, no shit. I fucking hope so.
Yeah.
Although Sam is thankful that Christopher is now in prison, she has made efforts to deal with her trauma. She still deals with the aftermath of the situation and fears for her safety. As you would.
Yeah. A smart and person I would.
Hope he never, ever, ever gets out. Ever.
Yeah.
All right. Tell us about this Lars Mittank, who I recognize the name, but don't know why.
So in July of 2014, a young German man named Lars Mittank ran through Varna Airport in Bulgaria, barefoot, terrified, and without any of his belongings. He sprinted across the parking lot, vaulted a fence, and disappeared into the fields beyond the forest just outside the airport. And he was never seen again.
What?
What could drive a normal, healthy 28-year-old man to flee into the wilderness, leaving behind his wallet, passport, and phone? Was he running from someone or from something inside his own mind? This story is the story of Lars. Oh, God, the German names. Lars Joachim Mittank. That's what I'm going to go with.
Okay. We'll just go with Lars.
A case that remains one of Europe's most haunting unsolved disappearances. A mystery made all the more chilling because the final moments were caught on camera.
Wild.
Before his name became attached to one of the internet's most infamous mystery videos, Lars Mittank was a regular guy from northern Germany. He was born on February 9th, 1986 in Berlin, and was raised in Itzehoe, a quiet town in Schleswig-Holstein. I feel like I'm talking like the chef from Muppets. Friends and family described Lars as friendly, intelligent, and down to earth. He had a steady job as a technician at a power plant. He had a girlfriend and close relationship with his parents, particularly his mother, Sandra. He loved traveling, soccer, and music. He was a lifelong fan of the German football club Werner Bremen, known for its passionate supporters and long-standing rivalry with Bayern Munich. Soccer names are confusing.
Yeah, I don't know anything about.
We have animals here.
Yes.
I don't know. Bayern is a made-up word, but. By all accounts, Lars wasn't reckless or impulsive. He wasn't the type to vanish or cause trouble. So when he decided to take a summer trip to Bulgaria with a few friends, no one thought twice about it. The group arrived in the Golden Sands, a lively resort area along the Black Sea near Varna. The trip was supposed to be 1 week of sunshine, beer, and beach parties. A break from
that
the grind.
That sounds like fun.
Of work. Yeah. Sounds like my 21st birthday.
So it's just spring break.
Yeah. But just days before he was supposed to return home, something happened that would change everything. On the night of July 6th, 2014, Lars and his friends went out to a local bar. Golden Sands was full of tourists, mostly young people from Germany, Britain, and Eastern Europe, enjoying cheap drinks and club music. At some point during the night, Lars got into an argument, reportedly with a group of Bayern Munich fans, the opposite or the rivals of his favorite soccer team. No one knows exactly how the fight started. Some say it was lighthearted football banter that escalated. Others claim locals got involved. But it was confirmed that Lars was hit in the head, and by the next morning, he was in severe pain.
Oh.
His left ear was throbbing and he could barely hear out of it. His friends urged him to see a doctor before flying home. They went to a nearby clinic where a physician examined him and diagnosed him with a ruptured eardrum, likely from the fight the night before.
That can't feel good on an airplane.
Yeah. Well, So the doctor prescribed him Cefprazil, a common antibiotic, and strongly advised Lars not to fly for several days due to his ruptured eardrum.
Right.
The pressure changes would fuck it up.
Right. It would be terrible.
Yeah, it could permanently damage his hearing. So they advised him not to fly for a couple days. So with his friends flying home that night, Lars made a tough decision. He told them to go ahead without him. He'd stay behind, rest, and catch another flight after his fucking ear canal healed. Not healed. I've had a couple drinks, if you can't tell, folks. His friends didn't think much of it. Lars was calm and reasonable. They said goodbye, expecting to see him back in Germany within a few days, but that was the last time they ever saw him. When Lars checked into the Hotel Color in Varna that night, his behavior began to change drastically. The hotel staff later described him as nervous and paranoid. He kept pacing the halls and staring out of the windows as if he was expecting to see someone.
Oh.
He called his mother, Sandra, several times throughout the night. At first, he sounded uneasy, but as the night went on, his tone shifted. He told her that people were following him and that they were trying to kill him.
Don't like that.
He whispered, afraid someone might overhear, and at one point even mentioned that men who fought with him the night before might have hired someone to track him down.
Oh.
Sandra tried to calm him down over the phone, but he was inconsolable. Then came a strange moment. He asked her to cancel his credit cards and look up the side effects of the Cefprazil or whatever antibiotic he was prescribed. He was convinced that it was dangerous and that it had been given to him to poison him. So he was fully convinced that people were trying to assassinate him. The last phone call from that night ended abruptly. Lars told his mother that he didn't know if he should stay at the hotel or leave. And then he hung up.
Oh. Oh, my God. As a mom, I'm so scared.
You're getting 140 missed calls. Like...
Yeah.
Yeah. So later that night,
I'm getting in a car and I'm coming to look for your ass. Just saying.
Well, he's in another country.
I don't care. You can still drive between countries in Europe. Is he on an island? I'm driving.
I forget where he's at. He's in a... Where was he? Golden Sandals.
If you were
in Varna... fuck it. I can't remember.
If you were in another state, if you were on the East Coast.
Yeah.
Get any farther away.
Are you calling someone over there, at least?
I am getting in my fucking car, if that's all I can do, and I am driving to find
you. You're doing
your
the cannonball run?
Yeah. 100%.
So later that night, hotel surveillance captured him leaving his room in the early hours, looking down both ends of the hallway. Kind of like how what was her name?
Looking
Lisa,
for, Elisa Lamb?
Elisa Lamb, yeah. He's kind of acting weird like that. Looking back, like, each side of the hallway and then quickly going back into his room. Acting very strange. But whatever you saw terrified him. So on the morning of July 8th, 2014, Lars took a taxi to the Varna airport, planning to finally go home to Germany. He looked exhausted, but calmer than the night before on the video cams. Airport security footage shows him entering the terminal with a small shoulder bag. And because of his ear injury, he went to see the airport medical doctor, Dr. Kostov, to confirm that it was safe for him to fly. Because he had the ruptured eardrum, and so he was like, just make sure it's all healed enough that I can at least go home, because he's panicking.
So that's a pretty lucid thought. To go to the doctor and have him look at you. That's...
Yeah, and that's the weird part. So once...
That's a good sign.
Inside the small examination room, Lars appeared coherent and polite till suddenly something changed. While the doctor was examining him, a construction worker walked into the room to do a quick repair. The moment the man entered, Lars' demeanor completely
freaked
changed.
Freaked out? Oh.
He stood up abruptly and muttered something like, I don't want to die here. And then Before anyone could react, he ran out of the clinic. He left all his bags, all everything in the clinic.
Oh my.
Wow. CCTV cameras captured what happened next. So Lars ran through the airport's main terminal at full speed, barefoot. He sprinted past the passengers and baggage cars, through the automatic doors, into the parking lot outside, leaving everything behind. His passport, wallet, phone, clothes, bag, everything was in the doctor's office at the airport.
Right.
He ran across the parking lot and then climbed a 2-meter fence, disappeared down a grassy slope, and vanished into a field bordered by dense woods. And that was the last confirmed sighting of Lars Middink.
That is wild.
His mother later said she received one final phone call notification from his phone that day, but when she answered, there was only silence.
Oh.
When news reached the German embassy and Bulgarian authorities, search teams were deployed around the airport. They combed the fields, nearby roads, and woods areas surrounding the Varna airport. Dogs, drones, and volunteers joined to look for this guy. But there was no trace of Lars. No clothing, no footprints, nothing. The area he ran into was rugged, a mix of farmland, overgrown bush, abandoned structures. Some local villagers said they saw a man matching Lars' description walking along the roadside that day looking disoriented, but those reports were never confirmed.
Mm.
Bulgarian police eventually suspended the active search, and back in Germany, Lars' mother, Sandra, began a relentless campaign to find her son. She released all the airport footage, the clips that you can look up this footage. If you look up his name, right, you see him running through the air. Like, it's eerie is the best way to put
yeah.
it.
Yeah. Well, yeah, when you know what happens, it's creepy.
Yeah, you can see him sprinting through the airport, just complete panic, and then hop the fence and disappear.
Wow.
So there's some theories kind of behind it, but the most widely accepted explanation is that Lars suffered a sudden mental breakdown, possibly a brief psychotic disorder triggered by a combination of stress, head trauma, and an adverse reaction to the medication.
Okay. I was wondering.
Yeah. I mean,
if the medication might cause psychosis, which you wouldn't think antibiotics would.
Not even the medication. He got a severe head injury the night before getting punched in the head or hit in the head. It didn't really clarify from the thing that I saw, but he was hit in the head with something. And so that can definitely cause similar symptoms. Usually it takes a lot of head injuries to do something like that over
repeated
an extended period of time. But
still,
the head is such a weird thing. Like, you could get hit just in the right spot, and then all of a sudden you're fluent in Mandarin or something. Like,
right. Yeah, true. We've talked about enough weird neurologic things.
I don't know. There's not really any explanation. There was not really any evidence of foul play and stuff like that. It was just kind of something happened to this guy, whether it was a combination of head injury, a reaction to the medication, like something happened to this guy and he was never found again.
Yeah, because you said it was an antibiotic. I wouldn't think, some people react differently and can be allergic to any medication, but I would think the head injury more likely
has most to do, especially if he's drinking that night. Maybe he took something and also had a head injury and it just reattached some wires that weren't previously crossed or something. Like,
yikes. That's terrifying to think about, that big of a personality change from one head trauma.
I've heard of worse. That's like, I don't know. The head is a weird thing.
There's scary. No like evidence that he had psychosis of any kind before, because he was in his late 20s, right?
No, like evidence in his family even.
Because 20s is when they typically are diagnosed with like schizophrenia and things like that, I believe.
Yeah, no, he had no previous family history or anything like that.
I wonder if on his that last night of partying, if they did any kind of drugs.
I mean, maybe, but that would have to be like MK Ultra level dosage.
True. True. A hero dose of some kind of psychedelics. Yeeks.
That CIA power strength LSD.
Yeah, no kidding. No, thank you. Do you have a chaser for us?
I do. So do you remember my chaser, the Spicer Jack-Jack, the cat that wears the cowboy hats?
Yeah.
On a farm?
Yeah.
So they got a kitten.
Oh,
I believe he has a his little name brother is or Monty. Sister? Yes, it's an orange kitty. And there's a bunch of videos since it's Halloween. They put a little dragon costume on the kitty and That's it can't adorable. Run with it. So there's like four or five different videos of the cat chasing after Spicer, and then it flips over in its little dragon costume because it can't run right. Oh
my goodness.
It's amazing. And there's a new kitty involved in Cowboy Spicer Jack-Jack's content, and I love it. It's my favorite Instagram That's account of all time is Spicer
awesome.
Jack-Jack.
Awesome.
He's a little cowboy
I
kitty.
I love it.
And he wears the costume so well. And they dressed up.
Cool.
He for Halloween he was dressed up as the British detective. What's that guy's name?
Sherlock Holmes.
Yes, he was dressed up as Sherlock Holmes for Halloween.
That's awesome.
And the kitten was a dragon.
I have never. Well, I shouldn't say that. I don't regularly put clothing on any of our pets, and I've only done it as a joke a few times where we put like reindeer antlers on our big dogs
on Hero.
We put a t-shirt.
Hero was good about it.
Hero was fantastic. We also put, do you remember you had that when you were little, you had a bathrobe that had, it was like black and red with flames on it.
And we put it on Hero.
It was fantastic. And he's just sitting there like, oh my God, I can't believe you guys did this to me. I have seen so many pet things on Instagram with pets being dressed up for Halloween. And I love it.
I wish I could put my cat in a costume, but she would freak out.
Oh,
and
she would lose her shit
under the bed. I tried to put a harness on her just so I could walk her on a leash, and as soon as the harness was on, she ran directly under the bed. So,
and you probably didn't see her for hours.
No, and you just have to convince her. It's like you just kind of had to drag her out because she was frozen. As soon as that thing went on, she went under the bed and froze like a statue.
Frozen, Lulu.
She's sensitive.
Yes.
What's your chaser, Mom?
My chaser is a website that posts good news on it. We've talked about it before, which is the Good News Network, but I found another one that's very similar in its content, and it's called goodgoodgood.co. So it's three goods and .co. And they have very similar stories, but the content is all like positive stuff. So if you're ever looking for my day is shitty and I need something uplifting, try out goodgoodgood.co because they have cool stuff on there.
I'll have to check it out.
Yeah.
I love good news like that.
For sure. And before we sign off for the day, I just want to thank everybody again for listening to us. And if you would be so kind to go rate and review us on Spotify And especially if you want to write a review on Apple Podcasts, we would love to read it out and give you a little shout out of thanks. Specifically, oh, yeah. Thanks.
Absolutely. We'll give you a shout out, say whatever nice comment you left for us, and
we would be ever grateful.
Yes. Thanks for listening, everybody. Love you, Mom.
Love you, bud. Bye.
Hey, friends. Thank you for supporting our podcast. Please share our show with your brutal and bizarre friends. Give us a boozy follow on your favorite podcast platform. If you're feeling extra generous, we'd appreciate a 5-star rating or review as well. But maybe do that sober so all the letters are in the right place.
You can find all our contact information in the show notes. We love hearing from you, and if you're interested in helping us stock the bar for our future boozy episodes, you can find our Patreon link in the show notes as well.